Good afternoon on this Friday. Welcome to the Channel Final Bell here on the Rural Radio Network. I'm Susan Littlefield. Well, we ended up finishing with some higher numbers in our grain complex. It was mixed on the live cattle and higher on the hogs. Of course, we do have some reports that come out this afternoon in regards to the cattle. We won't have a chance to dive into those numbers, at least on this report. But having said that, we've got a lot of influence that's out there on these markets, including geopolitical E15. And let's talk about crop progress, not as much on the western part of the Corn Belt, but holy Hannah, they're moving on the beans on the east part of the Corn Belt. We'll talk more about that as Sam Hudson joins us. Sam, of course, is with Corn Belt Marketing. So let's kind of start out with the geopolitical, because I think that really made the push on the varying overnight trade and just kind of continued to be brought up throughout today's trading session.
It was, and it's interesting to see the comparison, though, at the Board of Trade compared to crude oil. You know, crude oil, Susan, rallied, I think, more than $3.50 a barrel around 9 p.m. last night at the onset of that news. And within 2 hours, we had faded almost a third or half of that rally and then continued to do so into the morning hours as reports came out that really nothing had happened. But amidst all that, we also get the announcement from EPA about year-round E15 use. And I think that helps the cause from a headline standpoint, at least from a demand standpoint. I don't know that it's going to, add a whole lot to the bottom line. And even if it can, we're still kind of pushing the throttle on ethanol with margins as is. And I just don't think it's going to equate to a whole lot of demand. I think, what's coming down the pipe and the policy is going to matter a whole lot more over the next 5 to 10 years.
So that E15, though, I mean, there was a lot of anticipation, a lot of waiting. And I think folks were kind of excited, at least on the onset, to see some. But like you said, it might not have as huge of an impact on the corn market as we thought.
It may not, and it goes on 20-day cycles, so, they can end it at any point in time. And like I said, with margins the way they were already, I just don't know that this is going to equate to a whole heck of a lot more usage. We're not talking about major retooling at the pump or anything. And so I think you're going to get kind of your typical customers there, and any growth there is going to be somewhat inconsequential. I think the bigger issue here, at least for the short term for this year's dynamics, is just going to be how we get this crop in over the next 2 to 4 weeks.
But doesn't it bring some optimism? Because we know those Midwestern state governors are pushing for it to be year-round, not just during the summer.
Well, exactly. You look at that just 4-month period here where, we get a little tip of the cap. But, in the back of my mind, that call me jaded, but it almost makes me wonder that if this is just kind of a feather in the cap or a little biscuit for us before we get some disappointment on something else.
All right, jump over to what you were talking about here just a second ago, and that was planting progress. Let's first hit on this wet weather, because I know that that's been a definite slowdown.
It has been, but you know what? We'd rather have it now than 2 or 3 weeks from now, especially considering that some of the best rains and heaviest rains have come in some of the driest areas. You look at parts of Nebraska, southeast South Dakota, southern Minnesota, into Iowa. That area, really, for the better part of the last year or more, has been consistently dry. And so this calms a lot of the drought fears as we go into, the spring and summer months. And, it also could take the edge off of, adding risk premium early on, even when things do turn warm. I think our first hurdle is actually getting it in, though. When you look at forecasts going home this weekend, it looks like the 2-week still looks kind of wet. The short term, next 5 to 7 days, could offer a chance for the Western Corn Belt to get something done. But the temperatures aren't screaming higher. And I think that's going to keep things at a little bit of a slow start, especially for corn. I think beans have been a little bit of a different story. I think if guys have been able to, as long as it goes, they've been a little bit more confident about getting a start there.
And now I want to talk about this Eastern Corn Belt, because when you told me before we went on the air where you guys were at planting progress, I was like, what? Did I hear you say that right? But you guys have really been going crazy on the soybeans.
That's right. Temperatures got up there. We actually saw ground temperatures anywhere from 65 to 70 degrees there for a couple of days. We missed a few rains, and so I think some producers took full advantage of that. Some are probably not started at all, and you got some that are probably 3/4 of the way done with their soybean crop. Corn's been a lot slower comparatively. And, those ground temperatures just aren't where guys would really like it to be. I think, it's going to be hard to find anyone over a third planted in that regard. And again, some have not even turned a wheel. So just all over the place. But, another testament to how quickly it can get in as soon as the window opens.
And I find it interesting as well that Argentina is now running into some weather issues. There's a few wet spots in there that are causing some problems.
Yeah, they've had some areas that have just had, you know, not enough rain and then way too much. But, you know, the way too much, I think, is a larger threat, especially this time of year. Not only with crops in the field, but crops that are in bags still from last year. And that's true in some parts of Brazil as well. So keep an eye on that. I don't think it's one of these things that can have just a massive shot in the arm to markets, because we have this supply buffer that's still hanging over our heads. And until we can eliminate that, it's going to be hard to put a charge into things. And the quickest way to do that would be to have a problem here in the U.S. I don't think those little issues on their own can add up or stack up, you know, to be enough to get us back under a 2 billion bushel carryout on its own.
As producers are saying, bite your tongue, because we'd like to have a decent crop year. What about the fact that Mexico was back in again buying corn, which I find kind of interesting considering all the politicals that still float around what's going to happen with GMO corn in Mexico?
That's right. And it seems like at least for now, you know, the leash is off of that. I think as you get out into 24, 25, you could see some tendency or some shifts there. But I think the issue is always not really, you know, if we could or should or what have you. It's just really the pace that it was being requested at, which was just completely unrealistic. So the good news is, though, in the short term, that you know, the pace to the southern border on exports is just, you know, really impressive. Unfortunately, the rest of the export campaign is not doing the same. And so it's helping to fill the gap. It's helping to keep us on pace. But if we can't pick it up here on the tail end of South America's crop, then I think we run the risk of seeing additional export demand cuts as we get into the summer.
And we know that the pressure is there when it comes to export potential from a soybean perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and one bright spot is the premiums at the port in South America are far better than they were last year. But I think a big part of that is that they were more prepared for the crop last year. They just weren't logistically, I think, and just alternative capabilities there. In addition to the fact that, you know, China's continuing to gobble up whatever they can. I think some of those purchases have slowed down here recently. But when you look at year-over-year business, it's really still quite strong. It's just not coming from the U.S.
All right, more is coming up. It's the Channel Final Bell on the Rural Radio Network.
Channel and Fontenelle have joined forces to bring you a product lineup that's second to none. Here's Channel Seed Pro Steve Bristol from Bristol Ag at Ravenna.
You know, we have the best and most complete seed portfolio in the corn and soybean industry, and it just got better. No seed company has a hybrid built specifically for each field's individual demands other than Channel.
For more, talk to your local seed professional or go to channel.com. Always read and follow label directions, IRM, green marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Welcome back to the Channel Final Bell on the Rural Radio Network. I'm Susan Littlefield as we're continuing our conversation this afternoon with Sam Hudson. Sam is with Corn Belt Marketing. Real quick, you're going to get to see more comments coming from Sam during the Nebraska Soybean Board Weekly Market Roundup, which airs on Saturday morning. But having said that, looking at the Channel Final Bell for today, let's talk a little bit more about these export potentials that are out there, Sam. And I know we talked about it right before the break, was what is happening with Mexico? They're back in and buying a lot.
Yeah, they are. I mean, the pace has been good there. As I mentioned, it's been slow everywhere else. And, you know, unfortunately, when you get into, you know, these bearish price trends, you know, the quote-unquote sexiest thing to look for is that supply shock to really flip things quickly. And unfortunately, if we don't see that, the demand-led rallies take a little bit longer to take place. And so it's good to keep that strong, stable, steady business, as you mentioned, and a partner like Mexico. When you look around the globe, though, with these BRICS alliances, without a supply problem in South America, China, you know, tends to favor us. And so with another election coming up here, I think it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what the stance is towards policy there. Obviously, there's been sharp words from Trump on China. Biden hasn't had a largely different view, but it's probably been a little bit more catering to them as well. And so I think that provides some initial trade challenges. I think that's what puts even more emphasis on this domestic demand, you know, potential with biofuels for biodiesel, sustainable aviation fuel. You know, we saw domestic, another record for domestic crush, Susan, here, 196.4 million bushels on the NOPA crush report here. And, you know, it just is a testament to how much there's a concerted effort there is to move in that direction. The question is, how quickly can the policy, you know, provide the demand, the demand footing for the market in general?
All right. So what about the dollar, the way the dollar has been moving? And is there the potential? We saw the Philippines earlier this week making a purchase. So it's got to open the door for some other possibilities as we look past China as that key source.
It certainly is possible. I mean, the volume there, you know, isn't going to be, you know, enough to you know, cast a light, you know, compared to China. But open up those other trade avenues is going to be critical if we continue to lose that on the world stage and cut ourselves out of that export market. But when you look at the dollar on its own, you know, over the past couple of weeks here with this inflationary trade being on, it's you know, providing even more headwinds. And so that makes it even more difficult coming out of South America's crop to become competitive at the ports. And I think that's a real key for our markets. You know, we've already talked about these short positions so much. I don't know if there's a lot more they can throw at that. And so the next move lower has to be producer-led. And if that comes in the form of panic selling come July, when those July contracts go off the board, I see that as a possibility if the crops are in good shape. And, you know, hopefully that would be enough to trigger some demand and base some markets and create that export demand that we need to put a floor in things.
Let's jump over to what's happening on the livestock. Of course, you and I are talking ahead of this afternoon's cattle on feed report, but it just seemed like this market, it just had a bit of a pullback feel on this final day.
Yeah, you know, it's it almost seemed easy to see a path higher leading up to this report because we'd taken so much premium off with avian, you know, bird flu situation. And at the end of the day, you know, the happenings of the last 2 or 3 weeks is not going to, you know, really alter the numbers that we're going to see this afternoon. I think it's going to continue to reinforce the fact that, you know, we got some, you know, tight herd numbers. And I think as long as you keep the economy on track, we have to expect that that's going to support the market. And so this really could end up being a big buying opportunity, but I think a large part of that's going to depend on, you know, how many more of these headlines we have to digest and what the impact that has on the cash market.
What are your thoughts on the feeders at this point? I know that there's a lot of those heifers that went to market or went into the feedlots this last year. And as you look at the potential impact that they'll have, is it going more be on a winter trade number that we're going to see the economic impact of these gals?
I think that's possible. You know, when you look at the cash trade, just in the desire for these animals though at the auction barn, despite all of this, I mean, it's hard to see, you know, feeder cattle index, you know, rushing below 235 unless we have another wave of this bad, you know, bad news. If there's, you know, more of a tying to the cattle market in general, I don't know that, you know, I can see us completely bucking that trend. And I think, you know, if we see that definition in the cash market, that's going to stick around. The spread should lead us back higher. I think what's interesting, you know, for the feeders as we get into, you know, the month of June, July is that August contract. With all this news out here and what we're going to be determining on the feed side of the equation with getting this crop in, you could see a lot of volatility and a lot of deviation between those futures and then where the cash market's trading.
Well, we could definitely say, though, that the bright spot of this livestock market today had to be the way these hogs traded for a Friday.
Yeah, and definitely surprising to see them you know, finish the way they did. You know, it's been pretty impressive to see the lean hog index continue to track higher. I thought we were going to run into a little bit of resistance and some consolidation trade, but they got a huge shot in the arm with, you know, getting with the avian flu story. And I guess at this point, we'll see if that June can continue to lead the way higher, if we need to test the waters underneath the buck.
Lots of things that we looked at today. Sam, what's the best way for folks to get a hold of you?
800-655-3380 or www.cornbeltmarketing.com.
All right. Again, just a reminder, you'll be able to hear more from Sam coming up for this weekend's Nebraska Soybean Board Weekly Market Roundup. But in the meantime, a quick reminder that commodity futures and options do involve a substantial risk of loss, not suitable to all investors. That has been today's Channel Final Bell, being brought to you by Channel Seed and your local Channel Seed professional. Pick it up as a podcast at ruralradionetwork.com or wherever you subscribe for your free podcast. That's the Channel Final Bell on the Rural Radio Network.